Hello, my name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. Thank you for joining us. Today we're talking to Penny Sansevieri about marketing your book online. The title is Red Hot Internet Publicity 2.0. Penny is the founder of Author Marketing Experts, Inc., and she's a best-selling author and internationally recognized book marketing and media relations expert. Her company is one of the leaders in the publishing industry and has developed innovative social media and internet book marketing campaigns. She's the author of 5 books, including Red Hot Internet Publicity, which has been called the leading guide to everything internet. AME is the first marketing and publicity firm to use internet promotion to its full impact through the Virtual Author Tour, which strategically works with social networking sites, microblogs, blogs, book videos, and relevant sites to push an author's message into the virtual community and connect with sites related to the book's topic, positioning the author in his or her market.
And to get started, I wanted to just say, I mean, your approach to book marketing is kind of different than the traditional you know, get yourself on the New York Times bestseller list and magazine articles and getting on Oprah, which is kind of a big fat dream that's so not going to happen for 99.9% of us.
Right.
So given that that's unlikely to happen, what should we be working for as far as publicity? What's your approach?
Well, my approach has always been exposure. And the real, you know, we've had in the last 15 months, we've had 10 books on the bestseller list. And what I have found is that there is a particular metric to success. That metric is great to shoot far and wide. It's great to say, you know, I want to be on Oprah. It's great to say, I want to be in the New York Times. I want to be a bestseller. But you can't get to any of those places without exposure. Most of the guests on any of the major shows, most of the major success stories that you hear, they don't pop out of the womb, so to speak, a bestseller or a huge success. So what we look for, what I look for, is getting the author exposure. That's the biggest thing. You know, when you have enough exposure, you're going to have great things happen to you, like book sales, which is something that we all aspire for, right?
Yeah.
You know, the ongoing quandary, right, is, well, how do I get book sales? How do I sell the book? And the answer to that is exposure, exposure, exposure. And that's part of the reason why we spend so much time marketing authors online, because it's a better experience and a better way for them to get the exposure they need.
Not to mention frequently a lot less expensive.
Yeah, very, very true. Well, and also the results are a lot more long term. So, you know, if you put up a very successful Facebook fan page, let's say, for example, or you're doing a Twitter campaign, that's not going to go away. I mean, the results of that are felt. I mean, everything that we've done, and you know, I walk the walk. I mean, I do everything that I recommend to people. I mean, I do myself, unless it's not appropriate for my market. And I can't tell you, I mean, Twitter is my best friend. I know that probably sounds like a real geeky thing to say, but you know, I mean, it has been a tremendous asset to the company. Now, Twitter may not be right for everybody, but the point being is that these social media platforms and all this, you know, inbound marketing that we hear so much about today is really, really, really great for long-term results.
Well, I mean, you've mentioned a couple things. What are some of the main things we can do to use the internet to drive sales? I've always said that, you know, the biggest thing that people never really think about is that it's all about links. The internet, that's what the whole thing is all about. So when you're talking about inbound marketing, what you're really talking about is links. So you kind of need to start somewhere. So how do we use the internet to get all that exposure and inbound marketing?
Well, the first place that you start is on your website. Now, you have to have a website that's doing something with the traffic that you're sending it. Otherwise, all this inbound marketing isn't going to matter at all. So that's the, you know, I mean, really, having a super aggressive internet campaign and a website that is subpar is sort of like advertising for a beautiful store and then locking the doors and not letting people in,
mm-hmm.
right? So you really, you want to have a website. And when I say that a website that's converting, I'm not talking about spending, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars on a site. You don't necessarily, it's not how much money you spend. It's, you know, where you spend it. And how, you know, the, making sure that the site is designed not for you, but for your audience. That's the first thing. The second thing is that you need to understand before you embark on this, on this journey, you need to understand the rules of the road. And the rules of the road are this. You must lead your internet marketing campaign with helpful information. You can't lead with your wallet. So in other words, you can't go online saying, hey, I want to make a lot of money really quickly. Because that's, you know, maybe it works for some crazy internet marketers, but for the most part, it does. There's no sustainability to it. So you want to lead with helpful information. What you're there to do is you're really there to network, and the internet is one big networking meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like walking. You would never walk into a networking meeting and walk up to a group of people and say, "I wrote this book. It's fabulous, and you should all buy 10 copies." Right. So you would never presume to do that online. So the first is obviously you want to have a great place to send them to. The second is understand your approach. So before you go out to get all these inbound links to your site, understand what your approach is going to be. What are you going to give your market to get those incoming links? That's the first thing is understanding that. And sometimes it takes a while to know what exactly they want. I mean, most of us know. But sometimes there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of trial and error with that. I mean, I experienced the same thing when I first got onto Twitter, and I found that, you know, at a certain point, my numbers on Twitter really, really, really started to grow because I had finally hit on exactly what my Twitter followers wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a little bit of time. Then what you want to do is you want to find those, you know, find the communities where your audience exists. And the reason that I really like social networking sites is we call them feeder sites. So they actually feed traffic into your own site when they're used effectively. The idea behind getting on a Facebook fan page or Twitter is not to leave the people there, but to encourage them to come back to your site.
I think that's an important point that a lot of people really miss, that you don't want to set up. It's like Facebook is not where your internet presence should be. You need to have a separate internet presence, and then Facebook and Twitter are all about getting people to visit that location.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people kind of get hung up on the, oh my gosh, I need a Facebook page, and that's going to be my destination. And that's not really the destination. That's kind of where people are taking the journey from to get to the destination.
You're right, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is you know, if you're not really sure if you're getting people back to your site, if you don't know if your marketing is paying off, then check your back end website statistics. See if you're getting traffic back to your site. I mean, that's one way to tell. You know, traffic numbers don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, see if you're getting people back to your site, because that's really what the goal is you want to get them back there, and then obviously make sure that you're selling off the site and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it really, and you know, it's also about a conversation. I mean, I wrote an article on Huffington Post called Social Networking on Blogs. And what I mean by that is commenting on other people's blogs that are in your market. So if you've written a diet book and you're on, you know, fitness, you know, a fitness blog or a health food blog or whatever your topic is, and you're out there and you're commenting, you're engaging that blogger. And every time you leave a comment, it's an incoming link to your site.
Mm-hmm. Although, isn't there a way to sort of have that turned off? Like no follow links or something?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you absolutely. Yeah, some bloggers. I mean, some bloggers do that, but I don't really. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of that. I think you really want to engage. Mm-hmm. You know, you really want to engage people on your site.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would not usually not recommend turning that off, because you want to, you know, you want to encourage conversation.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of this kind of dovetails into the concept of creating a platform, mm-hmm. which is something that a lot of people talk about but don't really define kind of exactly what's involved. And I know that more people are looking at using the internet to sort of develop their platform even before the book comes out, and then obviously after it's out. But can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely, because the platform, you know, an author's platform is so crucial. And it's not who you know, but who knows you. So it's your area, you know, it's that market that's beyond your initial area of influence. When an author first starts marketing their book, they will sell to friends, coworkers, neighbors, family members, whatever. That's your area of influence. What happens is a lot of times the authors can't get past that. So let's say their area of influence is maybe 1,000 people, including Facebook followers, Twitter people, you know, all that. And maybe they sell books to 20% of that group. And then they think, well, I can't really go any further. That's where a platform will start to take you further. And a platform is anything to do with you and your, you know, your book or your message. It could be your business. It could be your speaking. Maybe it's just the industry that you belong to. If you've written fiction, it could be your science, you know, the science fiction, you know, groups online, or, you know, romance, you know, people who love reading romance. I mean, a platform looks very different for every author. What I recommend that you do, because platform is kind of a nebulous term, and I get this a lot where people say, well, okay, I kind of get it, but I don't really get it. And I did a worksheet. I just got done teaching. I think I mentioned to you, I just got done teaching a self-publishing class for NYU, and I actually put together a platform, you know, a platform builder document. I was no real official term for it, though I probably just made one. And what I did was I encouraged students, and we spent a lot of time on this, which is one of the reasons that I realized that as a marketing person and somebody who talks about platform a lot, I need to spend a lot more time on this, because, you know, your platform, you need to figure out the elements that need to be part of your platform. So figure out what that is first, what that is for you, and then figure out how you can build on them. And if you're really locked, if you really just don't know, you know, where to start, start to look at really successful people in your market. Go to their websites and see if you can glean from their websites what their platform consists of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's usually a good place to start, and then you'll know what components you need to have and how you can then build, you know, start to build your success. But platforms happen, you know, one building block at a time. So figure out what you need, maybe two or three elements. Don't start overwhelming yourself with 15 pieces. And then just figure out how you need to, you know, what you need to do to build them. So, for example, if your platform is going to be your speaking, what's the first thing that you need to do with your speaking if you've never spoken before? Well, it's probably either going to be identifying your speaker topics or identifying your market, or maybe it's a little bit of both, okay? Are you going to do it online? Are you going to do it offline? I mean, I probably do an equal amount of online and offline presentations, but that choice is entirely up to, you know, the author's availability. The best way sometimes to sell your book is to talk about it, and the best way to build your speaking career is to promote yourself online, because there's a lot of companies that go online looking for speakers,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that's one element of it. The next element might be that you're building, you know, you want to build your coaching. And when I talk to authors during the initial consultation, the first thing I do is I say, you know, what's the goal for your book? And no fair saying that you want to sell copies. Because that's everybody's goal. You know, we all want to sell copies of our book. But you need to have a goal beyond that. And then what do you need? What are the pieces that you need to get there? And a lot of times that's all part of the platform building. I mean, did that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's. I think that the thing that's a little nebulous about platform is that people don't think about it, and I've heard the term, you know, having planks in your platform, and people want it to be one defined thing, and really it's a lot of different things that, you know, multiple planks that make up the platform, and that's why I think it's really hard for people to get their head around it, because it is everything. It's your blog, it's your entire internet presence, which can actually be kind of vast depending on all the different things you're doing. It's your speaking, it's your internet presence, it's your, you know, all kinds of different stuff. So
yeah,
it's kind of intimidating. So with that in mind, you know, where do you start with this? What if you're, you know, what are the first steps that you take?
Well, the first steps that you take are, again, to align yourself with your audience. So find out where your market is online, and then, you know, figure out how you're going to interact with them. So if building your internet presence, building your online presence is one of the pieces of your platform, and it should be, then, you know, you want to go out there and find those pockets of people that are going to be interested in what you have to say. And then give them something, give them what they want. So, you know, maybe you want to do, you know, a guest blog post, or maybe you want to do the blog commenting, or maybe you want to build your Twitter following, or whatever that is. Give them what they want, not what you think they need.
That's actually kind of a challenge for a lot of people. A lot of people, that's a really important point, I think, because a lot of people don't take the time to find out what people want. They just sort of say, I have this, and I'll throw it out there.
Yeah.
And then they're surprised when nobody wants it, because they didn't actually ask first to find out if it was something that that anyone wanted.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a very, very good point, because that's where I come back to the fact that the numbers never lie. So if you're on, and, you know, it's really funny because I was just writing an article on this too, because a lot of people ask me that same question. You know, first off, how do I know, well, okay, I'm doing all this stuff, but I'm not getting a response. Well, maybe you're doing it, maybe you're not speaking to the right platform, so maybe you're on Twitter doing all this Twitter stuff and the message is right, but the medium is wrong. Or maybe the medium is right and the message is wrong, right? But either way, something is not working, because if it works, you'll start to see an increase in traffic to your website. And you're not going to see 1,000 people overnight. You're going to see, you know, maybe an extra 20 people, and then an extra 50 people, and then an extra 100 people, but you're going to see something. So that's the way to know, you know, you're going to see an increase in fans. You're going to see an increase in Twitter followers. That's how I knew. And when I train people on Twitter, I say, when you have hit your mark, you will know, because people will start to follow you. You know, it's that whole sort of field of dreams, right? I mean, you know, if you build it, I mean, they may not come, but eventually, you know, you start to see those, you know, if you remember the movie, you sort of, all those cars started to line up, and all of a sudden it just started to happen, and people will find you. But you have to make sure that you're giving them the right message. And like I said, sometimes it takes a little bit of experimenting. And that's why I said, you know, get to know other people in your market and see what they're doing and what's worked well for them, because you can cut your learning curve by following people who are successful in their industry, in the industry that you want to be in.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, you know, you start off, you need to have a website that's a destination, mm-hmm. and then you can start adding on to these different planks, and you've mentioned several times that you're writing all these articles, and on the internet, I mean, I've said this a million times, is that content is king. I mean, that's what, you know,
yeah.
Because of the way the internet works, people search for answers. It's all about the words. So, and the irony here is that I often hear writers complain that I already wrote a whole book. I don't want to write anything else. So, you know, how much more writing do I have to do? This is hard.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious what your response is to this, since I think you've mentioned like 3 or 4 articles that you already, and I know you write tons of stuff. So.
Well, you know what? Let's face it. It is hard. You know what? We've already written the book. And believe me, sometimes we do a newsletter that goes out every 2 weeks. This is part of the presentation is I feel your pain, because I'll tell you, every 2 weeks we put out a newsletter and I have to come up with fresh content. And sometimes I stare at my blinking monitor, you know, blinking cursor,
yeah.
Thinking, I have nothing more original to say. You know, and then
all, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm just done. I don't know what else to say. But you know what? The first thing that I say, and you're absolutely right, it is really tough to create constant new content. I want you to think about the term recycling, because if you've written the book, you have a lot of content in the book that you can use. In some form or fashion, every piece of Red Hot Internet Publicity, which is my internet book, is syndicated or Twittered on our blog or somewhere on the internet. Now, people say, well, aren't you afraid that nobody's going to buy your book? Not really, because if you have enough time to go and find every page of that book online, God love you, because I don't like,
yeah, really.
You know,
yeah.
Right? So you can modify your book, so you can pull, you know, 500 words or 1,000 words or whatever, and you can start by using the content that you've already created. So start there first, okay? Then what I recommend that you do, now let me give you my model, and maybe this will be kind of helpful for your listeners. So I have the blog on the website. I blog for Huffington Post. I also have the newsletter, and then I have my Twitter account and my Facebook account. So the newsletter is not anywhere online, and we do that intentionally because the article that I write for the newsletter is oftentimes something that I have run on Huffington Post. Now, I'll run that on Huffington Post for 2 to 3 weeks prior to taking that article and then putting it on the Author Marketing Experts blog, but we'll put it there as well. And then a lot of times, you know, we'll do little tips and pieces and things like that from the newsletter, and I'll Twitter on those, right? So that creates my Twitter content. And then oftentimes the articles can be, you know, pieces from the article can be excerpted in 140 characters or 120 characters, and I can Twitter on those as well. So as you know, I had to create this model because, listen, you know, I'm teaching and trying to run a business and working with authors, and I can't spend the day at my computer thinking up really, you know, genius ideas, right? You know, you create
little tweets every 10 minutes.
Yeah, every 10 minutes. I mean, hello, that would just make me crazy. So I try to the best that I can to use one article in multiple places, you know, so recycling that content. And I really encourage you, I mean, look at what you already have. You finished the book, right? Much of that can be syndicated online. Much of that can be, you know, and if you're syndicating articles, so for example, we syndicate all of my content too. People say, well, isn't somebody going to get bored reading the same thing over and over again because I'm recycling so much content? Not really, because you're meeting, you know, not everybody's going to be on the same medium. So the people who are on Facebook, on my Facebook page, aren't, you know, always following me on Twitter and vice versa. The people who read our blog aren't the same people who read the Huffington Post blog. So people are getting the information in different ways. And, you know, the recycling is done in such a way that it's sparsed out over a little bit of time, so it's not, you know, the same article hitting 10 different places at once and people going, wow, she really is kind of boring. You know, it's used in different ways. And I've never had anybody come back to me, unless everybody's just really polite, I've never had anybody come back to me and say, you know, I've seen this, you know, 3 other times. So to some degree, you know, you do want to recycle what you create. So I really, really, I encourage that and I recommend it. You know, the other thing is that if you have a newsletter or if you have a blog, the best thing that you can do is start to pre-plan your material. And if you can pre-plan it, if you can sit at the beginning of the month and just take a couple of hours and start to look at what you're going to talk about that month, that will really help you, because as we start to get involved in our days and our lives and our businesses and selling our books and going to work or whatever it is that we're doing, you know, we lose sight of, oh, gosh, that's right, I have to write an article for the blog or I have to do something. So pre-planning your stuff is always, always a great idea too. But does that make sense? Is that helpful?
Well, certainly to me, because I'm like the recycling queen, so I'm like, you're like preaching to the choir here. But, you know, these are things that I know other people don't realize how many people are recycling quite as much as we are. I mean, I do exactly the same thing, and my newsletter is recycled onto my blog. It's recycled onto an article site. It's, you know, you tweet that you wrote an article, and then all this stuff can just build on each other because, as you say, different people are following different audiences, and you never know, particularly with a medium like Twitter, where it's just sort of like this giant stream of stuff. People could hit your tweet, you know, you could tweet the same thing for, you know, an entire month and umpteen different people would see it because it's whenever you happen to be kind of on.
Yeah.
And it's so random that, you know, I sort of view it as just sort of like throwing stuff out there and seeing who notices, you know what I mean? Because it's going to be random different people.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And then, you know, the other thing, too, is that sometimes you can look at sometimes you can write an article and then 3 or 4 months later you might rewrite it from a different angle. You know, I've done that with some of my pieces where I've looked at something and I thought, you know what, and maybe I've taught a couple of sessions or something and somebody's come up with different questions and whatnot. I thought, you know what, I think I need a different take on this. And so I'll rewrite the article. It looks like a completely new article, which it pretty much is, but it's based on the same premise. The other thing is if any of our listeners do talks or even book signings, you can get a lot of your content ideas from the questions that you get in the audience.
Exactly, because for every person who, and actually I'm kind of looking forward to this at the Self-Publishers Online Conference that we're going to be doing, because there's going to be all these people asking questions, which means I'm going to have newsletter content for like the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you say, it's like you get people together in one spot. Another way you can do it is you don't even have to talk to anybody. You can sneak around forums and just see what questions other people are asking and be a little lurker. But still, again, you're seeing what are the real questions that people want answers to.
Right.
And that's really important.
Right.
I know you're a big fan of blogging, and I've run across quite a few people who are confused about or resistant to blogging and what makes blogging different, better, worse, easier, harder. I mean, why is blogging considered important, you know, one of the important planks of creating a platform?
Well, first off, a blog personalizes your website. So a blog gives your website a voice, right? It gives it your voice. And it also, you know, you don't want to have a static site, meaning you don't want to have a site that's not changing. You want to have a site that has new content on it. Blogs also help with your search engine optimization. So search engines like websites that are updated frequently, and a blog will help you to do that. So there's a number of just on-page factors, so website factors that you want to do the blog because it makes for a better website. The second reason that you want to do it is because in order to pitch a blogger, you must be a blogger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to go out to this quote-unquote big networking group with only, you know, half of the tools in your toolbox. And, you know, bloggers respect other bloggers. And so, you know, in order to be part of that networking group, yes, you do need to get out and blog. And I recommend, you know, at a minimum twice a week, 2 to 3 times a week if you can. It doesn't have to be long, by the way. A lot of people do blogs, and they're these endlessly long blogs. And, you know, that's all well and good, but I don't always have the time to read that. So sometimes my blogs are 50 words, right? Sometimes, you know, blogs are just, you know, short little links to articles that you saw. You know, there was an announcement this morning that a fairly large print-on-demand publisher was purchased by an investment house.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I might put that up on my blog later today with a link over to the article because the people who land on my site are interested in, you know, publishing news and marketing news and things like that. So sometimes it can be something that simple.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that people don't think about is that if, like you're saying, you're syndicating your content or doing guest posts, you can actually link out to other places. You can sort of, you know, they call it link bait, where if you give somebody a link, then a lot of times they'll link back, and, you know, you sort of establish friendships in a way, you know, online friendships, I guess you could say, by linking out to other things. In my case, I use my blog mostly to link out to articles that I have archived. I create article sites so that it's easier to find older posts on my article sites than they are in a blog. So anyway, I use my blog basically as a linking mechanism to link out to my articles, which are all over the internet.
Yeah.
So again, you're creating that link network, which is again, that's a huge part of the internet, is that it's all about the links.
Yeah, it's all about the links. And and the other thing is that if you have, there's a website called Alltop, which is Alltop. And you can go out to a site like that if you're scratching your head for ideas to blog about, and search up your keyword, whatever your keyword is for your industry, and get some blogging ideas there, because that site pops up everything news related to your topic.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some great idea generators online if you're really sort of at a loss on what to talk about.
And that's actually another big comment I hear about blogging. It's sort of like, related to the, oh, my gosh, I have to do so much writing. It's like, oh, my gosh, if I start a blog, what will I ever blog about? And that's a great idea. I mean, do a search on your topic. I mean, Google is your friend.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Even something, as simple as just doing a search can give you more information than you could ever imagine. And the other thing is that it can give you ideas not only you can start a contrarian discussion. You see some article about how, publishing, you have to publish on the Kindle or something, and then you go, I don't want to publish on the Kindle, and here's 12 reasons why.
Right.
And, and then that will create, again, more link fodder. And in a way, with a blog, it's like, because it's designed to be opinionated, it can, some people find blogs actually rather liberating.
Yeah.
You can say things that you wouldn't say on more official, when you're writing a more official formal article, because it's by its nature, it's personal, and it's blog stands for weblog, so it's like a personal journal. So people aren't going to be surprised if you kind of let a little bit more of yourself hang out.
Yeah.
Which in some ways can make it easier to write.
Well, it can be, and a lot of times I think that folks think that if people aren't responding, that they aren't reading. So if people aren't commenting on your blog, that people aren't reading. And it takes a while to turn that corner. I mean, for the first 2 months or so, there usually isn't a lot of comment activity on a blog. But keep at it, because, again, much like the metric of are you getting traffic to your site, at some point people are going to start to write on your blog or post a comment, and then that you're hitting the right mark.
Mm-hmm. So I know that I mentioned this in the introduction, but you do virtual author tours, and you kind of said that in order to approach bloggers, you have to be a blogger, and a virtual author tour is essentially going around to blogs, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the virtual author tour, essentially what that is it's, you're going around to blogs, and you're either asking for them to review your book, or maybe excerpt, or maybe you're offering them, a guest blog or an article post or something like that. You are somehow contributing to their website in whatever fashion that they are, that they accept contributions. Not all blogs do book reviews, for example. But interestingly, a lot of folks say, well, I'm going to tour myself for 2 weeks online. I'm going to do a 2-week tour online. That's not long enough. I mean, people say to me, how long should you plan to market yourself online? Well, how long do you want to be an author, right? I mean, you should always, always, always be looking for opportunities. Blog tours that last a week or 2 weeks really don't do that much for the author, And the other thing is you want to make sure that, and this is a big statement now, because a lot of people are popping online with blogs saying that they're book reviewers, but they don't have a lot of of sort of credibility online, or followers, or anybody can put up a beautiful site. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are a significant blogger. So you really want to make sure that you're pitching the right blogger. Because with book reviews, I'll tell you something, it's not about quantity anymore, it's about quality. I've known people to get, 60, 70 book reviews and have it never move the needle on their sales. And then I've had other people who have done 5 book reviews who have done significantly better. Mm-hmm. And the difference between the two is that the one with the more book reviews probably just went and, threw a whole bunch of stuff online to people who reviewed the book and didn't have, we're getting 5 people visiting their site a week. That's not really going to do you much good.
So how can you tell if a site is worth pitching?
Well, see how many book reviews they've done. You want to see that they've been doing book reviews for some time. So maybe 6 months, maybe a year. They've got some book reviews. See if they've got comments on their blog. See if they've got an active blog. So not just them blogging, but if people are commenting. That means that they have an active, participating following, and that's important because you want to have a book reviewer that has a good following, okay? The other thing is you can also check the page rank of their site. So Google has a toolbar that you can download into Mozilla or Internet Explorer, whatever it is that you're using. And the toolbar will show you what the page rank is. So the page rank runs from 0 to 10, and anybody that you're pitching should be somewhere between, I would say a 3 and a 5. I mean, a 6 and a 7 if you're really lucky, but generally, 3 to a 5. I mean, that shows you that the site's been online for a while. That they've, there are maybe some inbound links into the site. Those are some of the ways that you can tell that a website is doing well. Also, you might even gauge it by advertising space that's being sold, because some of the bigger book reviewers can sell ad space on their blogs too, to bigger companies, which most of those companies won't align themselves with bloggers who don't have a lot of traffic. And when they're selling ad space, they have to show their traffic numbers, so which you don't really have to do if you're just pitching them for a book. So that's also another key indicator.
Well, and just to give people a little food for thought, the Spawn website, which is at spawn.org, actually has a page rank of 5.
Yeah.
And has years and years of book reviews about the publishing industry. So pretty much anyone who's writing a book on writing or publishing or freelance writing, things like that. I mean, I know Patricia Fry has no trouble getting books in for reviews. In fact, I suspect she has a backlog at this point because she reviews one in the newsletter every month. So
yeah.
I mean, that's actually, I know, before I was the president of Spawn, I asked Spawn to review my publishing book. So
yeah,
that's and that just gives you one website with one target, and obviously it's a very focused audience. But actually, that's another thing to think about. What you're saying is that you want to be reviewed on websites where your likely readers would be. So if you're writing a book on fitness, ideally you would want to be on every, have your book reviewed on every fitness website you could find.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you wouldn't care about Spawn.
Right, well, yeah. Sorry, yeah, but you know what?
Sorry.
But the thing is that you're absolutely right. And sometimes you may get a, a situation where it's going to be really, really, really difficult to, that it would be really, really difficult to get a, to get on a particular website. Let's say it's a very, very busy site or it's a news site or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can always get on that site by blog commenting. So that's an alternative way to get a presence on that site, because anything that you post on a blog, there's a link back to your website. So it's a great way of, and we've been doing blog commenting for years. I mean, even before it was really in style as it is now, but it's a very, very significant way to market.
So kind of turning from blogs to the rest of social media, which is a whole other giant topic, but, I mean, what are your favorite social media tools? I know you mentioned Twitter, Facebook. What else?
Well, I also like social bookmarking. I think social bookmarking is important as well. You know, there are some key social bookmarking sites. I recommend, you know, social bookmarking all of the pages of your website and every time you post a blog. And I would, you know, Squidoo is also another favorite of mine. Squidoo is the brainchild of Seth Godin, and it's squidoo.com. It's a great social networking site. In fact, it's probably what I would consider, you know, the Facebook for authors, because they're very, very supportive of authors and publishers. And because Seth Godin is an author, obviously, so he's got a particular passion for that. But we've had some great success putting authors on Squidoo and you know, funneling that traffic back to their website.
So when you say social bookmarking, what specific websites are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about, you know, Dig, Delicious, Stumbled Upon. I mean, those are some of the biggies.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do a whole lot of them, but you should do them pretty regularly. And not just, you know, also social bookmark content that you like, that other people have put up, and when somebody features you on their website, social bookmark that page. It's very helpful to get that, you know, it's very helpful to get that link back into your own site, but it's also a nice thing to do for somebody else whenever you social bookmark their, you know, their content. Once you have an account with these sites, it takes just a couple of minutes to go in there and bookmark, and it's really not that dissimilar from bookmarking privately, you know, on your browser.
Mm-hmm.
Bookmarking a page that you really like. But I find that is that all of this helps to create the inbound links that I keep talking about. All of that really, really helps to create, you know, a significant presence for yourself online. And, you know, yeah, we're throwing a lot at listeners in this call, but really, if you figure out what your game plan is and figure out what you want to do. So let's say, I really like Squidoo. I think I want to be on Squidoo. I'm not really sure if, you know, Twitter's going to be right for my audience, but I'm going to start there and maybe a Facebook fan page and, you know, maybe doing some social bookmarking. I mean, figure out exactly what is going to be part of your recipe for success. Don't try to do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, parcel out your time. So I recommend spending 15 to 30 minutes a day on your social media. And once you have figured out what your content is, then you figure out what your content is, what you're going to blog about, and as you start to work through what your audience wants, then that whole sort of social media recipe becomes a little bit easier to manage.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the big do's and don'ts for social networking?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest don't, obviously, is you don't want to, I mean, yes, we all know we're all out there selling our book, but what you don't want to do is you don't want to be overly promotional. So lead with helpful information. That's the first thing that you want to do. The other thing that you want to do is understand that the internet works best when you grow your online platform slowly over time. I do not recommend doing anything that is instantaneous and that is, you know, because there are a lot of programs out there and even some companies out there that promise you 1,000 Twitter followers overnight. Not only will that not help you, but it could get you shut down. So slow growth over time, building your platform, you know, as an ongoing long-term objective. That's why I say doing a two-week blog campaign makes absolutely no sense, because you don't get anything out of that. It has no lasting presence whatsoever. You know, so that's the next thing is slow growth over time. Stay away from people who want to build, you know, thousands of incoming links to your site in a very short period of time, because that could get your site actually shut down for spamming. So you want to be careful about that. And Google does monitor that stuff. We actually had a client who, before they came to us, had bought into something, and that's called link farming, where they go out and they just get a whole bunch of incoming links to your site. And their site was actually shut down. So you want, for about, I think, 3 months during the launch of their book. So that's a pretty worrisome thing to have happen to anybody. So slow growth over time, and we've been doing this internet for gosh, I'm over 7 years, probably closer to 8 years now, and I haven't heard that happen a lot, but it does happen from time to time. So you just want to, you know, sort of be aware of it. And again, you know, just really understanding what your audience wants, and the internet is, once you get into some, you know, some form of a marketing model, or, you know, your own little marketing machine, everything starts to kind of feed on itself. So you'll find that Twitter followers are recommending you on Follow Friday. And for those of you who are on Twitter, you know what I'm talking about. And on Writer Wednesday, you'll start to get people that are saying, oh, you've got to follow this person. And you know, so you ever at some point, it starts to take off. And that could be a month, that could be 3 months, that could be 6 months. It just depends on how aggressive that you market it, and how on message that you are.
Well, one thing that I've sort of wondered about, I mean, social networking, one of the things that if it's being used for marketing, I mean, you end up with people friending you or following you that, you know, you kind of really don't necessarily know. And I mean, some people, I've seen sort of two sides of the coin where someone will sort of go out and aggressively friend everybody, like say you're, you know, in publishing, friend everybody who's even remotely related to publishing in Facebook, and then follow 20,000 people, you know, that they found on some list of publishing people. And then, you know, and a lot of times with, like with Twitter, you have people that if you follow them, they have a thing called autofollow that they'll follow you back. So that's one of the slightly spammy ways to end up with a whole lot of followers, is to just sort of go out and I think that Twitter actually has some kind of mechanism so that you can't even, they can tell if you're like doing that automatically in a really grossly spammy way.
Yeah.
But I mean, what is your thought? I mean, I have probably, I don't know how many friends I have, but I have like more than 1,000 friends on Facebook. And I mean, to be fair, I don't really know a lot of them very well.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like, I'm sort of the, oh, if they friended me, unless they look really creepy or stalkery, then I'll accept it. You know, I haven't really heard, you know, what other people's take on it is. I suspect that I'm probably being too generous.
Well, not really. I mean, once you pass the 2,000 threshold on Facebook, then you have to be careful, because then you're starting to get a lot of spammers that may be following you and weird stuff happening and things like that. So once you get past that 2,000 seems to be somewhat of the magic number on Facebook. When it comes to Twitter, you know, interestingly enough, the key to Twitter is really not, you know, you could have, and I'm going to say something that's going to probably fly in the face of pretty much everything that everybody said out there about Twitter, but it's really not the amount of followers that you have. Because I've seen people with 100,000 followers who are pretty much all dormant followers.
Mm-hmm.
So what you really want to have is, you want to have, you know, better to have a smaller number of really engaged people than a huge number of folks who are pretty much asleep at the wheel, or maybe, you know,
start
their Twitter account and then abandon it. And people are really impressed by these numbers. But if you look at things like, how often are they retweeted? How often, you know, are they engaged with their Twitter followers? So, you know, when somebody retweets you, by golly, say thank you. You know, maybe it's annoying, but thank goodness that you're being retweeted, because that's the secret to Twitter. It's not in the amount of followers. It's, you know, the retweeting. So when you talk about, well, okay, so what does that mean? How many people should I follow then? Well, you should follow people who are key to your industry. So I follow people in publishing. I follow Susan because she's fabulous. I follow people who are marketing, publishing, other publishers, other publicists, things like that. You know, I follow people who are in my industry, and then I follow our authors and whatnot, kind of see what they're Twittering on. If they haven't Twittered in 3 days, I'm getting on there going, okay, you need to be Twittering. But, you know, the idea is that if you're following somebody who doesn't follow anybody else, that's not really going to help you very much. Because let's say, for example, okay, we did a campaign with a guy who was all about, recycling, reuse, recycle, the green economy, all of that. And Honda had a big, huge ad campaign around this. So we decided that we wanted to try to get Honda to follow him. Well, now Honda has a lot of people, obviously, that follow them, and they don't follow a huge number of people back, but they do follow some people back. So we got on there, we followed Honda, we started to comment on some of the stuff that they were posting, and then they followed this guy back. That's really the key, because if they follow you back, they could retweet something that you posted. So if you're following people with huge numbers of followers and they don't follow anybody else, that's not really going to help you. Mm-hmm. Unless you were just so engaged, maybe you want to follow Oprah or whatever. But, what's she having for lunch, right? I mean, I don't particularly find that really interesting, but some people really, some people follow folks who don't follow anybody just because they want the inside scoop, and that's fine, but they're not going to help you promote your book. So don't follow Oprah thinking that she's going to find you, because I don't follow her, but I don't think she follows anybody. I think that's just the way her account was set up, which is totally understandable for somebody, of that high level of exposure. But that's the whole piece of it. So, Facebook, like I said, 2,000 people, you're going to probably want to start to get really selective. And, I agree with you on the creepy looking ones, but sometimes people just post these, sometimes people just post these crazy pictures, and then you meet them in person, you think, wow, you don't really look like the stalker that you are.
Couldn't you have found a better picture, dude?
Yeah, couldn't you? I know. But I just thought that was, my mother took that picture, or who knows what. So,
people
who,
post a picture of a plant. It's like, what does this mean?
Yeah. What is the, is there some sort of subtext to the plant picture? I'm a little confused.
Or the truck.
Yeah, exactly.
It weirds me out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Facebook is a weird thing. And that's another thing that you've sort of touched on, is that each of these social media things has its own little sort of culture. And I think that, most things I've read have said, just spend a little bit of time, just kind of watching what's going on before you jump in and start going nutso and see what the culture is. Because, Facebook is really different from Twitter and just how people interact with each other, partly because you can put up pictures, which you can't really do on Twitter very easily.
True.
So, and that changes the social aspect of the social media.
Yeah.
How people are being social.
Yeah.
And which people are more active on which one. I've noticed just because I have because I also have the Pet Rescue Association, I have I have the pet people and I have the book people, and a lot of the pet people are much more active on Facebook because they're putting up pictures of their dogs and their cats and all this other stuff, whereas a lot of the publishing people who are more oriented around words are more active on Twitter because they're posting links to articles and things like that and are able to express themselves in 140 characters, which is actually kind of a challenge for a lot of people. So
yeah, I know. It was a challenge.
It's a good thing if you're a writer.
It was a challenge for me in the beginning, too. But, yeah, it is. And, you're right. I mean, that's interesting that you would key in on those two markets because, the pet market, is such a huge growing market. I did a conference called Blog Paws a month ago, yeah, and I'm going to be doing it again in September. Highly recommend it. It was a great event. I was blown away. I came away from that thinking, I want to put up a blog for my dog, which, of course, who has, I don't have the time for that, right? But there are two very different, pet people, right? I mean, it's all pictures and, it's a very different market. So very insightful because every market's going to be different.
Yeah.
Every market is going to have different nuances to it. And by looking at what other people are doing who are successful in your market, you'll get a better sense of what your model might look like, and you'll be able to sort of, you know, follow some successful people. And it's always a great, it's not imitation. It's just learning from what people have done before.
Mm-hmm. So I know we've gone a little bit over, but we started a little bit late. Do you have just a couple minutes to take a couple questions? We do have some people on the line. I can unmute them.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, let me unmute them. Okay, I know you're out there. I know Patricia's out there.
I'm here. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi,
how are you?
Good, 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 good. I'm wondering about LinkedIn. I keep hearing that's a very good social media network for authors.
You know, I've heard the same thing, but I have not been impressed with LinkedIn. I mean, we don't even use it in our marketing yet. LinkedIn was a little late to the social networking party. I haven't seen a lot, I mean, I know there are a lot of people on it, and I think it's very, very good specifically for businesses, and corporations, but we haven't really seen a huge amount of success with it as of yet.
Okay, thank you. One other thing, and then I hope others will chime in. What is your book, an excellent book for someone who has been resistant to the social marketing area and who wants to get started? Is that who your book is addressed to, Penny?
I did intentionally address the beginner market, because so many times I go out and I teach, and thank you, by the way, Patricia, for asking about it.
Yeah.
So often I get out and I teach about this stuff, and they are, and people just say, gosh, I'm so overwhelmed by this. I'm so overwhelmed. I don't even know where to start. So the book is really, really a ground level, you know, from the ground up starting. If you want something more advanced, I can certainly recommend some books for you. But, yeah, that's where Red Hot starts and comes from.
That's where I need to start. I'm going to undig my heels. So thanks for your talk today.
Thank you.
So does anyone else have questions? I know there's a couple other people out there. I think I should probably. My screen finally came up. Yay, thank you, Instant Teleseminar. One thing to sort of expand on what Penny said as far as LinkedIn is that I sort of have the same attitude. It's like I'm on it, but I kind of don't get it. But I do know some authors who are in the who have written really business books that are directed at corporations, and they actually have had success with LinkedIn and finding people to network with, particularly for, you know, doing something like doing a guest post on a blog or something like that. They'll find them through LinkedIn because very, you know, I think button-down corporate types, you know, they tend to be more attracted to LinkedIn than something like Facebook.
Yeah.
So
that's
my experience.
Absolutely.
Like the author that I know that had some success with that, he wrote a book on outsourcing programming development. And, I mean, talk about corporate nerdy stuff. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's
so that,
perfect.
They were his people, and that was good. But so again, it really depends on your market and where they hang out.
That's exactly it. It depends on your market and where they hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's why you've got to, you know, you're more, and ironically, you know, people think that Twitter and Facebook skew really young, and they don't. They tend to skew a lot older. So if you're looking for the tween market, you're not going to find them on Twitter, you know. That tends to be a much older marketing platform.
Well, that's an interesting question. I've read that too, that they're not on, you know, a lot of young people are not on Facebook anymore. So that leads me to my next question, is wondering where did they all go? Where are they now?
Where are the young people? Well, you know
what?
I mean, they're looking at us, we're twittering back and forth, and they're sending text messages.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, they're looking at this thinking, I mean, yeah, sure, they're on Facebook. And you know, maybe they're on, you know, maybe they're on MySpace, although I don't recommend MySpace for authors because I think the conversion rate on MySpace is just terrible. But, you know, they're looking at, and I've talked to younger people. I sound so old. I've talked to young people, and they've said the same thing. Why would you bother Twittering? I could just text somebody, you know? So that whole concept of sort of mass updating is a little bit lost on them.
That's interesting, but, you know, the other thing to think about is that a lot of them also don't read books, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is that.
Which is a little scary statistic, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole different problem. That's a different teleseminar.
How do I get my audience to read? There you go.
Yes. Literacy 101. Yeah,
literacy 101.
Well, does one last call for questions, and then we'll let Penny go back and turn off her recorder since mine failed.
And we'll go, let Penny go back and Twitter, right?
Yeah, let her go back and tweet.
Oh.
I know there are a couple other people, if you're out there still, I think. People from Canada.
Well, I really had a great time. I can't thank you enough for inviting me to come on and teach this class. You guys do such a great service, so thank you so much.
Well, thanks for being here. I mean, for those of us who are listening later, you can learn more about Penny and all the work she does helping authors at her website, which is www.amarketingexpert.com. And so if we're done and no one has any questions, then thank you all for being here. And we'll hopefully see lots of you next week at the Self-Publishers Online Conference. We'll see Penny there.
Which is a great event, and thank you for inviting me back to that, too. It's like Christmas over here.
Yay!
So thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me on, and we will see you next week.
Yep.
All right.
Talk to you then.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.